Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kilowatt. My name is Bodie, and I am your host, and we've got a great show for you this week. I'm very excited. I sat down with Hamid Shojaei, and we talked about EVs, and we talked about battery backup, and we talked about Tesla, obviously. And I got to actually do an in-person recording, which, you know, hasn't happened since pre-pandemic, and it didn't even happen that often when I did do them. So it was really nice to sit down with Hamid and actually, you know, look at each other in 3D and have a conversation and just kind of hang out and talk about nerdy stuff, which I love talking about nerdy stuff, obviously. So it was really fun. A couple things before we get to the interview, I would like to welcome Steve to the Patreon community. Steve, thank you so much for supporting the show, not only financially, but with good advice and tips and just being an overall kind person. So thank you so much. Normally I do a Patreon plug here, but I'm going to give you guys a break this week. And speaking of breaks, normally we have an ad in the middle of the show if the show is longer than 30 minutes. Because this is an interview and we're not going to do any news this week, there's not going to be an ad in the middle of the show. So you guys get a break from that. I didn't want to interrupt our conversation with an ad because I know sometimes that can be distracting from what's going on in the interview. All right, and we're going to get to the interview real quick here, I promise, but I do need to make a correction. We were talking about the company Electra Mechanica. They make the Solo, and I had mentioned that they're making this ridiculously priced vehicle, and I thought it was called the Torino, but it's actually called the Tofino, and that vehicle starts at $50,000. What I should have said was the e-Roadster. I just couldn't remember it. I got the cars confused. The e-Roadster is this beautiful old classic Porsche-looking car. I said Corvette. I don't know cars. But it's this beautiful old classic Porsche car. It's $160,000 to start. It's got a 45 kilowatt hour battery pack, which would put the range right around 200 miles, depending on how efficient the battery pack is and how light the vehicle is, which it looks like it's really light. So when we get to that part of the interview, replace whatever I said with the information I just gave you, because I was very wrong. I mean, the point stands, but the actual information I gave was incorrect. So I wanted to correct that here. So let's go ahead and jump to the interview now that I've aired my dirty laundry. Hamid, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Bodhi.
Yes, thank you. For those who don't know, I just kind of hit you up on Twitter and I was like, would you like to come on the show? And you said yes. And here we are. So a week later almost.
Yeah. Well, I'm a huge EV enthusiast, Tesla enthusiast, space enthusiast. It's just like all the things that Elon Musk is trying to do, it seems like, are aligned with my interests.
Yeah. And same. So it works out really well. So before we jump into our two topics today, I just wanted to allow you an opportunity to let people know who you are.
I'm a software guy by background, Hamid Shojaei. I started a software company called Axosoft. Later, we had a sort of a side project that turned into another company called PureChat. And last year, I sold both companies. And now I'm sort of working on hobbies and podcasts and other cool stuff and investing. So I evaluate like startups, and I'm sort of in the back of my mind trying to figure out what I'm going to do next as well. So at some point I want to start another company, and doing some research as to what that will be. You know, impact is something that that's important to me this time around. So hopefully we can do something that has a great deal of impact for humanity.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about one of those options here in a moment. I will. Your podcast is AZ Tech Beat, right?
Yeah. AZ Tech Podcast. And then we have aztechbeat.com, which covers like Arizona tech news. But the AZ Tech Podcast, I have like founders and investors and people who are doing some cool shit, basically, is the way I describe it.
Yeah. And it's not, these are companies that are in Arizona, but they're just not doing business in Arizona. They're doing business worldwide. So it's worth, if you have that interest, to go and check it out. And I'll put a link in the show notes too, so that everybody can find it. So the first thing we're going to talk about, we're just going to go over some EV market. We're just going to talk about some EV companies and just get a different opinion, because this is largely a one mic podcast. So my opinion people know it. I go over it again and again and again. So it gives basically a little bit different perspective. So are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it. It'll be fun.
Let's talk about Lucid Motors. Your thoughts? Yeah.
So I'm a fan of EV in general. I want all the EV companies to be successful, just to be clear about that. I like what Lucid is doing. They're basically following the playbook of Tesla. And I think that's a great playbook to be following. And, if I had to bet on whether or not Lucid was going to be around 10 years from now and would be a successful company, I would bet that it probably will be, because it doesn't have the baggage of traditional car makers. Now, is it a company that's worth $80 billion for its IPO without having delivered a single car? Considering, 2 years ago, you could buy Tesla at less than, $35 billion when it had $25 billion in revenue. It's a pretty ridiculous valuation. But so was Tesla on the other end of the spectrum. Since the market was so wrong about Tesla and got it wrong for so long, I think the market is overcorrecting in the other direction with anything that has the label EV on it. So Lucid is a beneficiary of that.
Yeah, and we'll get to Rivian too, but Rivian, same, they're right around $80 billion. And this month, hopefully, they'll start shipping their cars.
Right.
But to this point, they haven't shipped a car.
Yeah, I mean, the same is true with Rivian. Rivian, actually, their cars also look amazing, and they've gotten rave reviews as well, which is another important factor. And I think they too are following in the footsteps of Tesla in a way, similar playbook, electric only, they're trying to figure out all of the software, the self-driving, the charging infrastructure. So, I think Rivian too will be a successful company, especially since they have some pretty amazing partnerships as well. So, but again, some of these companies might be getting ahead of their valuations, or their valuations might be getting ahead of their, obviously where they are, which is zero sales.
Yeah. Have you an opportunity to sit in a Rivian or a Lucid Air?
I haven't. All of the vehicles look amazing, in my opinion. Like, people say Lucid's car looks like shit or whatever. I mean, that's just personal opinion. I think it looks nice. And the interior looks gorgeous, in my opinion. So, and then the Rivian, every person who has interacted with it physically seems to rave about it. So, I've only seen positive things there.
Yeah, I've seen both. And I actually got to sit in the Lucid. And if Apple were to make a car, I firmly believe that Lucid would be like, that's what they would build.
Right.
Like, it is like inside, they've put so much thought into every single detail. And unfortunately, I think that some of that, like, just even the colors, like, this is the sunset in California at noon in this part of California, or whatever, not noon, but you know what I'm saying, sunset in this part of California. That's great. I'm afraid that they're being too
too detailed. So the mass production issues.
Right.
Yeah. I think they're I totally agree.
Precious
that.
Is what the word I tend to use is. But I love that they're thinking about that. When we went I took my oldest and we went to Monterey and we met up with those guys and I interviewed one of their marketing people. And when we went, I thought this is a car for elitists. These guys are going to be jerks. And they were so nice and so kind. And like some of the same people I talked to then are still working for the company, which is always a good sign because this was 2017. And that car, I cannot even express the amount of luxury that car has dripping off of it. I'm sure as they are making a more mass produced vehicle at the 60,000-70,000, it's going to drop down quite a bit, but it's a beautiful, same with the Rivian. The Rivian is a little more rugged. It's a little bit more like Tesla, I think, in build quality, but the amount of things that you can do with it and customize and mod is like hands down. Like I talked to a guy who designed the rear end suspension, and this guy talked to me for 30 minutes and he was one, super interesting to talk to. I had no idea what he was saying, but he was passionate about the rear end suspension. And he's looking around. He's like, that trailer over there, I designed that rear end suspension over there. He's like, I designed the rear end suspension to this vehicle over here. Like, these are people who are like, or was part of the design, I should say. These are people that are like passionate about their jobs in both companies. And it shows, like, hands down in what they're doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. It appears as though they're making some pretty incredible cars, which is wonderful. The worry that I have is exactly the worry that you share, which is that the more complex you make the car because of all of these luxury components that you need. It reminds me of the statement that Elon Musk often makes, is that, you know, if your car is 10,000 parts, the rate at which you can manufacture the car is based on the lowest component, the component that's hardest to produce. It's not like if you can get 9,999 of the parts every day, but you can't get one of them, well, you can't put out the car because you're dependent on all of the parts. So, some of that luxury aspect sort of worries me as to whether or not Lucid can deliver 20,000 cars a year or in its first year of mass production. I hope that they can, but those are the things that would be concerning to me if I was an investor. Like, where's the upside if the company is already valued at $80 billion? Now, if it was worth $8 billion, the upside would be, well, this company, if it starts delivering, might be worth $80 billion or $100 billion one day, but not if it's starting out with zero cars delivered.
Well, and I think their stock price, because I'm an investor in Lucid, and I think their stock price reflects that, because I just bought a couple of shares at $19 a share this morning when I woke up, and I was like, well, I mean, I'm all in on this goat, so might as well continue feeding it.
Right.
But yeah, so I think that's a good point. And you know what, Elon, at one point in time, when you configured a Model S, right after the Model S was released, you can configure that thing in so many different directions. And eventually they just said, we have to eliminate all of these options and just give, like, there's at most in each category, there's two options.
Right. That's essentially what Steve Jobs did to Apple. Like when he took over Apple, Apple had over 130 different products. They were like the VW of of like the computer industry, or like similar to Dell. And he basically eliminated all the products down to four. You know, so it's like we need a pro, laptop and a pro desktop, and a consumer laptop and a consumer desktop. That was the four matrix. And that's essentially what Tesla has done. They have four vehicles, the luxury sedan and luxury SUV, and then the sort of more less luxury Model 3, and that's more for the masses, and the Model Y. And within each one, very few configurations, and boom, now you can mass produce the hell out of all of them. And it makes things from a manufacturing standpoint a lot easier, a lot less components to worry about.
For sure. And it's definitely paid off. Like, there was a time when Tesla was like, bankruptcy was imminent, and they were like, they really did. Like, they had vendors that they were paying to do nothing. So that whole change was all a part of that. And it's really kind of bared fruit for them.
Right.
So let's jump into two of these companies you know pretty well, and then we won't talk about Aptera. But let's talk into the three-wheeled vehicles, because I also love three-wheeled vehicles. Like, I have such joy for the weird, and I'm so happy that people are doing weird things. So Electra Mechanica, what are your thoughts on the Solo?
So I've actually sat in the Solo. They have them at the Fashion Square Mall in Scottsdale. And it's an interesting vehicle in that, like, it is three-wheeled, and it's just for one person. Like, you can't put two people in it. And it's a car, essentially. It has, like, car doors. And everything about it is, like, a steering wheel. Everything about it is a car. And they're trying to be a three-wheeled car for one person for roughly 20-something thousand. And it looks way too strange for it to take off in a massive way, in my opinion. Now, on the other hand, Arkimoto, who also is a three-wheel vehicle, is not trying to be a car. It's closer to a motorcycle, but it's a motorcycle that non-motorcyclists would drive. And it's open. It's got the side open. And it's a two-person vehicle, which makes a big difference. You can actually take someone, a significant other, with you. and I think that makes all the difference in the world. And interestingly, there's variations of it where it's one person, but with a delivery sort of basket in the back that is enclosed for people who are delivering food or whatever. And I think that that company, Arkimoto, is likely going to be the successful three-wheeled vehicle out of the two of them. And I'm a huge Arkimoto fan and investor. So I've gone basically all in. I think that's one company that is undervalued considering, you know, if the Rivian and Lucid Motors of the world, who have delivered zero vehicles, can be worth $80 billion, and Arkimoto is worth like $500 million, roughly speaking. These guys have a lot more potential, and they've actually delivered 100 of them. So they're only sort of next stage as to whether or not they can get there is whether or not they can do the mass manufacturing. And that's what they're working on right now. So they're a year, year and a half away from mass manufacturing. And then if they're successful, that company is really going to take off.
What do they start at?
Also about 20,000.
Yeah. I think when I look at these vehicles, the Solo and the Apteras and the Arkimotos, I look at that as more of like the gig economy, delivering groceries, delivering food. Like, that's a really economical way to do that, because like when I first started the podcast, like, to buy all of this stuff, like, I needed to make extra money. So I did Lyft, and like, I made no extra money driving a Lyft. And I was like, well, that's silly. And then I went a different route to get the money to do this. But if you had something where you're delivering groceries or whatever, and you can do that, and it almost costs you nothing to operate your vehicle, right, your money, like, that, you're not 100% profit, but you're making pretty good money.
Yeah, at that point. Basically your time, right? But you're absolutely right. If you're doing that anyway, and the choices are to do that in a big gas based car that, you know, is like taking up a lot of room, hard to find parking spot for it or whatever, versus a Arkimoto FUV vehicle, fun utility vehicle, as they call it, super small, very efficient, all electric, gives you 100 mile of range, super fun to drive, apparently, from everyone who's driven one, seems to rave about it. So yeah, I think that they have a pretty good shot. And I think they have a pretty good shot in sort of like tourism and, an extra vehicle for like families that want to just have something fun laying around that they can take a quick trip on.
You know, that the tourism thing is really interesting. I'm assuming you've been to Santa Barbara, right? So yeah. There's lots of little tours that you can do on all sorts of weird little like go-kart looking things.
Right.
And my wife and I and the kids, we've done those. It's fun.
Yeah.
I can see like somebody up front, and every vehicle has a radio, and you just kind of follow along in the path. And
there's absolutely
tons of cool things to see in Santa Barbara that way.
Right, right.
And it's not busy traffic-wise, so.
No, that's exactly right. And then compare that to the Solo, which is basically a car, but for one person, as opposed to two, and it's like enclosed, and, you know, it just looks weird. The likelihood of success seems to be a lot lower for that vehicle.
Have you seen?
And by the way, I don't think they're in competition with one another. I think it's like totally different markets potential.
Yeah, no. And the same with the Apteria. I think the three wheels is really why I combined them together.
Right, right.
But have you seen the Electra Mechanica, the Torino?
I haven't seen that one.
So this is a beautiful sports car, two-seater, very classic-looking sports car from the 50s.
Okay.
$90,000.
Okay.
But no range. Like, no.
What's the range on it?
I want to say it's like 100 or 200, less than 200 miles or something like that. It's been a while since I've looked at it, but it's like so much money. And there's no the instrument cluster might be an LCD screen, okay, but there's like it's a very classic looking car. And if you're into that kind of thing, then that makes a lot of sense. Like if you want that classic Corvette look, or some of those foreign cars looks, you know, great, but it's still $90,000. You get nothing but the electric drivetrain and the look and feel of something that's old.
I would say, and under 200 mile range for $90,000 seems excessive. Because range anxiety is real. I think everyone who's bought an electric vehicle at the beginning has had range anxiety until they own one. And then if it's a Tesla, then you're like, oh, that was all like for nothing. I shouldn't have had range anxiety because I could charge it everywhere. And with the Tesla chargers, but if these other vehicles do put Tesla charge capabilities into their cars, and that could potentially alleviate a lot of the range aspect of it, range anxiety, but $90,000 is a pretty high price to be paying when you could be buying a Tesla, for example.
Yeah, when I look at these cars, like the Jaguar I-Pace has terrible miles, but is a beautiful car inside. It's got every bell and whistle that you could possibly want. The seats are really super comfortable and luxurious, and like the car is very lickable, right? And that thing starts at like $75,000.
Right.
So like the price that they want to charge for this car, and I might be a little lower, a little high on the price, but it's in that range, is absolutely absurd for what you can get out there. In other vehicles. And the I-Pace, you know, it's got its little issues here and there, but I don't know if you've had a chance to drive one or sit in one, but it's a really nice car.
Right. You know, one thing that Tesla has always done is, and this is something that I think people forget, that they think that companies or brands like Apple or whatever are marketing driven, and they're not. They usually deliver a product that no one else can deliver at the same price. Right. So, you know, when Tesla was delivering the Model S, you could not get another vehicle with those kind of specs at anywhere close to that price. And even in a gas-based car, let alone an electric vehicle. So there were no other options. So now that there are options, now that there are Teslas in the world and the Jaguar I-Paces in the world, and, you know, Mercedes is coming out with theirs, and VW has the Porsche Taycan, and Audi has their versions. So now that there's a lot of competition, the question is, why should someone buy that vehicle that gives you, you know, less than 200 miles of range and, you know, who knows what this performance specs are for $90,000? There's a lot of choice. So you can't just be a me too, I have something and it's not nearly as good, but here's the price tag on it. Maybe even if the price tag is a little bit better, people are still going to choose the better vehicle because, you know, you got to deliver something that's significantly better at a lower price. And I think companies oftentimes forget that. And it's easy to forget because it seems like companies like Apple are like a marketing-driven company, whereas, no, they're a product-driven company. They delivered products that no one else could deliver at those prices.
Yeah, luxury for some people is different than luxury for somebody else. For me, and I don't know about you, but for me, I would rather have the most tech-forward vehicle or whatever I'm buying,
right,
versus having something that had really nice, comfy seats. Like, I want the nice, comfy seats. The Model Y's got great seats.
Yeah.
The Ford Mach-E's got great seats. That's something that is important to me, but I don't need to have, like, the high-grain leather. That doesn't – like, if I have that and the entertainment system is terrible, like, I've lost.
Right. Or if you can't get software updates on, you know, like, yeah.
Or you have to take it to the dealer to get the car updated, and it takes you an hour and it's a 5-minute update. I just went through that with our van and it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
But so I'm a big fan of not EV shaming. Like, some people are going to go for, like, that Rod Simmons was talking about earlier. He's going to go for that Mercedes, or he's going to consider that Mercedes because he likes that luxury feel, and the car is technical enough for him. And he owns two Teslas, and he's pretty he's a very technical person. So that's a car that he really likes, whether he buys it or not, who knows. But the point is that's something that calls to him. I would much rather have a car like Tesla that continues to get better 4, 5, 6 years, and I know it's going to be supported, versus having a Mercedes that's really nice today and maybe in 3 years, but in 5 years, because I hold on to my cars for a little bit longer,
might be outdated, or
I'm not getting anything.
Right. So, you know, what's interesting is, like, I was a huge Mercedes fan before switching to Tesla, and I own multiple Mercedes, and I love the Mercedes. And I, to be honest, going from Mercedes to a Tesla, I was super disappointed at the beginning about the fit and finish, because Mercedes fit and finish is pretty phenomenal. Like, you go in, and the seats are incredibly nice, the panels, everything is, like, very, very nicely finished. And you get this sort of, like, expectation. Your expectation when you're a Mercedes driver is like one where, you know, you've come to expect a certain interior that Tesla doesn't really deliver at the beginning of when you first become a Tesla owner. You're like, wait, what? There's nothing in here. And the fit and finish doesn't seem as nice. And it's gotten better over time as I've owned a Tesla. But overall, you get into a Tesla, you're not super impressed by its fit and finish because there's nothing, not much there. But over time, you start to appreciate it. And then you're like, okay, forget about the fit and finish. The important aspects of the car are actually all this software that does cool stuff. Like when I open the door, my radio comes on and it's like, or, you know, the audio continues my podcast exactly where I left it off, or just all these little things. Or, you know, when I walk away from the vehicle, it automatically locks itself, or just... There's a million little things in a Tesla that you start to appreciate a lot more than just having nice leather seats, right? Or extra stitching in your seats. So, you know, when Mercedes comes out with their EQ series of vehicles, I suspect the people who are all about the fit and finish will start to buy those vehicles. And hopefully that'll mean success for Mercedes's transition to EVs. But I think they will lack quite a bit behind Tesla on delivering all aspects of what a new vehicle should be when it comes to software and range and battery systems and charge infrastructure and all of this stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out, you know.
Yeah, and that we'll take that to we were talking earlier, and you had mentioned that there's four transitions, you think, in the auto industry.
Yeah.
Do you want to go over those? Because I thought that was a really good
point. Yeah. So you know, like for 100 years, the car industry has basically been similar in that, like, it's internal combustion engine cars. They just make them better, slightly quieter. You know, like, it's all incremental changes, right? And when a disruptive technology comes along, it's when shifts can happen from existing established number one players or top players to new players. In the car industry, there hasn't really been a disruptive technology that has come along for a long time. Right now, we're in this sort of transition that four disruptive technologies are coming about at roughly the same time. One is where, like, everything in a car is becoming software-based. You know, it used to be that, for example, you know, like the ABS system, the braking system of a car was being controlled by software. And it's like this just modular system. You plug it in and, you know, like, somebody else makes the software. The car company didn't have to worry about it because they could have OEMs that make these software for the different aspects of them. But the software is now being unified in a car, where all of the software in a car is being unified and being able to be updated over the air, so that you can get, like, hey, if you got the formula for the ABS wrong, you can update it, as Tesla did for the Model 3 when, you know, Consumer Reports was like, wait, this is longer braking range than any other car we've ever tested in this class. And 2 weeks later, they're like, now it's better than any other car we've tested in this class. So the fact that you can do that kind of software update for an ABS system is you know, like that's a disruption by itself. So that's one disruption that's happening in the car industry. And it's, we haven't fully seen it yet. The other disruption is this sort of move to electric motors and batteries as opposed to internal combustion engines. That requires totally different skill sets on creating the cars, engineering them, but also in even like the way we power them, which is mostly at the house versus versus gas stations and things. So that's one disruption. Another is ride sharing, right? Right, Uber and Lyft and these things are causing people to essentially not own cars. Like 16-year-olds today or 18-year-old, 20-year-olds don't own cars as much as they did 20 years ago. So because they can get anywhere they want with just a click of a button on their phone. So there's less reason to own a car because of ride sharing. And then finally, autonomous vehicles that are going to be coming that can basically, it does the ride sharing, but without the driver, which means you can actually share the same car. If you want to even own the car in a family of four, instead of owning 2 to 4 cars, you can own one or maybe two cars and just have everyone share the same vehicles. Or you could even imagine a scenario where you just pay a monthly fee and a car is available to you anytime you want. And everyone just sort of like does that sort of thing, which might require 80% fewer cars to be manufactured in the future. So four different distinct disruptions all happening at the same time to the car industry, right? And it's all probably going to converge over the next 10 years. And there's only one company that is really good at all four of these things, right? And that's Tesla. So when you look at sort of like Mercedes or VW or whatever, these guys are just trying to stay alive with one of these transitions, which is the transition to EV. But are they getting the software right? Are they getting the autonomous driving right? Are they going to be able to like offer ride sharing through autonomous driving, the robo-taxi essentially, right? And it's hard to imagine that executives at GM or Ford or, you know, any of these companies would understand what's necessary to get it right.
Yeah. And Ford just hired Brad Field away from Apple. I believe that was his name. So it looks like Ford's really trying because he was at Tesla. He was at Apple. He was at Tesla. And then he went back to Apple. Now he's at Ford. So that's great. But to kind of bolster your points, my personal opinion of like advances in the auto industry have mostly been like government mandated. They're like, you need to have better fuel economy. Right. You need to have safer cars. And because of these mandates, then the auto manufacturers rise to that occasion, but then they stop.
Right.
And they're like, well, we'll add this other thing for next year's model and this other. Tesla doesn't do any of that stuff. They right. They're just like, it's ready to ship, we're shipping. And sometimes they have to do a software update to fix that. And then VW had hundreds, if not thousands, of ID3s just sitting because they had multiple vendors for their infotainment system. And then also for all of the other stuff that's running the battery modules and running the ABS, the stuff that you're talking about, they had so many vendors that it was just a mess.
Right.
And it just sat there.
So, you know, you can think of it as like in a company, a culture starts to develop over, you know, in its first few years. Now, a company that's 100 years old, like car companies that have been making ICE-based cars, they have 100 years worth of culture that is doing things a certain way. So, you know, changing out one or two or five executives at the top is not going to change this ginormous, you know, think of it as a aircraft carrier ship and turn around and like go all of a sudden in the opposite direction overnight. So that transition will be very difficult for them. And that's why they call it disruptive technology. Like when the computer industry went from mainframes to PCs, it wasn't IBM that was able to sort of transition through that beautifully. Because they understood mainframes and they never lost their edge on mainframes, but they didn't fully get the PC industry despite making one of the most successful PCs initially, but then like they lost it over time to others. Similar sort of thing happened to Kodak with sort of film going to digital, or BlackBerry, Ericsson and Motorola and Microsoft phones when the iPhone came out, because it was a disruptive technology that sort of made that shift. So when you fast forward, when the disruptive technology starts to come out, and then you fast forward usually 10, 15 years from that point, you find that the existing players almost are non-existent or niche players 10, 15 years later. So if I were to guess, my guess would be that, you know, most of the existing car industry is either going to shut down and completely go away, or they're going to be niche players in somewhere in the 10 to 15 year range. So that transition is very, very tough, largely because of culture. Because, you know, you can't take GM and all of a sudden convert it to a culture where, no, we're going to be updating our cars every 2 weeks with software updates. That's, you know, like maybe something will not be functioning perfectly, and then, like, that's okay, we'll update it again 2 weeks later so that it will function perfectly. You know, that kind of mentality doesn't even exist. Not to mention their cars weren't designed for that, with that in mind. So in a Tesla, everything is touch control on a screen, which means you can do a software update for everything. Whereas if you have buttons, the latest Corvette had like the, you know, like that string of buttons in the middle. It's like, those buttons will forever be whatever that button was intended to be for, and you can never change it or modify it or do anything to it because it's hardware. So,
but those buttons are beautiful in that car. Like, I was never a Corvette fan until the latest model of Corvette. And right. I was like, every time I see it, I'm like, man, it doesn't even look like a Corvette. It looks like a supercar almost.
Right. No, I mean, it's, you know, it's this sort of like, it's beauty aside, it's constraining, right? Because it ties GM's hands in what it can update, right? It can't do a software update that changes those buttons, you know, like, because those buttons also have labels and you can't change the labels. So, you know, there's constraints that gets placed on you just based on the way that the car has been built. So it hasn't been, none of their cars have been built with this sort of idea that they can change things in the future. Whereas Teslas have, because they have that sort of first disruption, which is software is driving everything.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to ride in a Waymo?
I have not, but they look pretty cool. I mean,
it's terrifying. Like, I've done it without the driver several times because they have them all over my neighborhood. And it is okay. So, I don't want to give away where I live, but I was like, I want to go to Trader Joe's, right? So it takes me up to Trader Joe's. It needs to make a left turn. It doesn't feel, it stops, and then it's like, nah, we're not making the left turn. So we go up through the major intersection, through a neighborhood, all the way around back onto a major road, and then back on the road we were on, but now we're going south instead of north, so it can make a right turn.
Oh my gosh.
And then it parked, like, and I felt terrible because it parked, and this was like, this was probably August of last year, the first time I did this. It parked right in front of the store, and there's a bunch of like little old ladies trying to get into the store. And it was just like, it just kind of forced its way in there. Not enough to hurt anybody, you know, but, and then it just let me out. And I was like, I wish you would have let me out just a little bit further back.
You're the guy everyone is looking at. Right. Like you just blocked our way.
And it hasn't. It's gotten better. It's been a couple months since I've driven in the driverless one, and it's gotten a little bit better, but it's not like, I can tell you hands down, Tesla's is better for sure. And, you know, Tesla's is the world. The Waymo right now is Chandler, Tempe, and a little bit of South Phoenix or whatever.
Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting there is that, like, I think Tesla is probably going to also have these kind of problems for a robotaxi, right? And I think they're years away from, despite, you know, what Elon is saying. I think I'm a better estimator of Tesla's things now than Elon is. So, yeah. So I can firmly say, I think that I'm more right than Elon will be on this. But I think they're at least 2+ years and possibly as much as, you know, 5 years away from robotaxis being a thing because of these little problems, because people are not going to tolerate those types of issues, especially at the beginning. So the advantage, though, that Tesla has is that for every car that they're putting out there, they're making, first of all, they're selling the car, and they're making $10,000, $15,000 of profit margin on each vehicle as they're trying to figure out this full self-driving business. For every car that Waymo puts out there, they spend over $100,000, maybe $150,000 to make the car with all of its cameras and things. And they're not making anything from it except for whatever they're charging for the ride. So for them to try to do this at scale actually would cost $100 billion to put 1 million cars out on the road. Whereas for Tesla, they already have 1 million cars out on the road. So the probability of success on who's going to figure it out first, even if Tesla was behind or it was behind a few years ago, even if it's behind today, which I don't know if it is, it might be ahead today. But even if it was behind, I would still bet on Tesla. I actually wrote an article about like why that would be the case several years ago, that describing all of these things in detail.
Yeah. And for me, the way I look at autonomous driving, right, is Tesla's an advanced level two, and they're probably the most advanced level two out there. Like Ford can't even take a gentle turn on the freeway without freaking out. And Tesla does fine, especially on the freeway. My oldest, she has a Tesla. So they have a Model 3, and they've been traveling all over the country from place to place to place in their Model 3 with their little golden retriever dog, or massive golden retriever dog, and mostly on autopilot, or mostly on full self-driving. And both, and I appreciate this, but both her and her boyfriend, like, they'll remind each other, hey, pay attention. Hey, yeah. Pay attention to make sure, right?
Yeah.
And they report back some minor issues, but largely, like, and they're traveling all over the country. Like, my sample size is going to be Tempe, Scottsdale, you know, Chandler, and then I work on the West Valley, in the West Valley. So the 202, basically, that's my sample size of where I would drive, but they're all over the place, and it's pretty much even.
Right.
Everywhere they go, which is a fantastic for Tesla.
Yeah.
But as you creep up onto the level three and level four and level five, it's more of like, how much do you have to interact with the car to make it do the right thing? And I think that's the hardest part to solve for.
Right.
And they haven't, unfortunately, to this point.
Well, it's getting closer. And I think that like having a backup driver makes all the difference, right? Like you can, like you said, I use my autopilot everywhere, including on cities. And then I just take over when I need to turn, you know, so it doesn't take turns for me in the city. On the freeway, it's great. And, you can pretty much rely on it. But I'm paying attention all the time. And if it was driving completely from point A to point B for me, that would be even better. But, you know, I'm there for like the edge cases at usually the ends, right? Like, how do you park and get it into a particular spot, or like, is it okay to park in front of that Trader Joe's in front of the door and block the people who, you know, like all of those kind of things? It's going to, you know, there's so many edge cases like that that I think it's just going to take way too long, or not too long, but it's just going to take years before it's there, right? So I suspect that the way in which Tesla is doing it is actually really good. It's just that, you know, they've always been the promises of Elon has been ahead of where they have been. And that's a little unfortunate. I wish he wouldn't do that, but because they have like the best system on the market in terms of what you can buy for a vehicle. And they, you know, people would be willing to pay even the whole 10 grand for just what they deliver today, as opposed to the future of like full self-driving with robotaxi capability.
Yeah. I think they need to sell. Yes. One is Elon needs to dampen down the message a little bit. Two is they need to sell for what they have and not what they're offering in the future. Because I know, like the Mel Herbert, who does the he does a podcast about Tesla. Oh, I'm missing it. Anyway, he's bought, like, in the time that I've been listening to him, he's bought like three or four Teslas in between, and he's paid for full self-driving every single time. Yeah. And he hasn't got full self-driving. He's got what they offered.
They've been selling it for 5 years, roughly, which is with the expectation, setting the expectation that it'll be delivered within a year, pending, you know, regulatory approvals or whatever. But it's never even been remotely close to delivery. So for 5 years, people have switched cars, et cetera. And the funny thing is that 5 years ago, they were selling it for $5,000, right? And the reality is that $5,000 also got people this sort of autopilot with the ability to change lanes and, you know, like all this sort of safety features that people would have been willing to pay $5,000 for, you know, and you could have just recognized 100% of that revenue. I think this is a sort of mistake that, you know, at some point Tesla is going to pay for possibly in legal actions, but I believe there's like lawsuits that are around this that are happening to Tesla. But, you know, it was an unnecessary thing for them to be promising it within such a short period of time, setting that expectation and then not delivering on a continuous basis, on a rolling, you know, 5-year period of time, and it's still not delivered.
Yeah. And then when I first started the podcast, I think it was either that year or the next year, Hardware 2 came out. And it was like, Hardware 2 is all you're going to need. Right. Don't need anything. And then Hardware 3 came out. And it was like so much more powerful than Hardware 2. Now Hardware 4 is where we're at. And we're probably like Hardware 10 before we really get anything that's going to reasonably be safe for people to be driving around on the road.
Hardware 3 technically is driving, you know, their beta program is Hardware 3 for a couple thousand people. And, you know, from the videos, it seems pretty good. It seems like it's a software-based problem as opposed to hardware improvements. Although there is a question as to whether or not the camera angles are perfect and, you know, all of that stuff. But Hardware 4 might fix that. And maybe it's Hardware 4 that sort of actually delivers it. But in any case, the software itself, I think, is probably a few years out. So for robo-taxi level, to where the car is driving without a person behind the wheel at all. No backup driver.
Yeah. And Elon and everywhere. Mentioned that there were some limitations with the current cameras. And then on the Cybertruck in late 2023, when it's finally released, those limitations should be corrected with that new hardware. But anybody that has Hardware 3 now with the current camera system isn't going to get that unless they buy a new vehicle, unfortunately. And I would imagine that it's – like even if they wanted to, it would be so cost prohibitive to retro install,
right?
It wouldn't make
so
sense.
You know, imagine if you didn't have that cloud over your head that, like, you know you've been promising and selling FSD for 5 years and haven't delivered, and that's a cloud, in my opinion. It's a self-induced cloud that shouldn't have existed. They could have recognized all of the revenue and have been delivering autopilot, essentially, during this entire enhanced autopilot, as they used to call it. But anyway, we can move on to other subjects. But.
Yeah, I like, this is really good to chat with you about, because honestly, like, my friends are like basically cavemen, right? They know nothing about technology. They know nothing about, like, when I got an iPhone, they're like, why would you ever need something like that? Now they all have iPhones. So they're about 10 or 15 years behind of everybody that's reasonable in the world. But I have these conversations with them about how the Teslas are, you know, driving into whatever. Right. And it's like, well, no, like 11 drove into a fire, into emergency vehicles. 11 out of all the Teslas that are out there and all the incidences that have been similar isn't a very big number. So it's nice to have a conversation with somebody that can pose different points of view without an expletive being added at the end and an insult. So
no, yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think people are very emotionally driven when it comes to like a fire or whatever, an incident. And I think that obviously media, because the way the media works is not, it doesn't cover things in the appropriate way. So they exaggerate, or it appears as though they exaggerate, but all they're doing is covering the things that are interesting and will get clicks. So, you know, when there's fire, whether it's a Tesla or now the Bolt, right? Like, it feels like, oh my God, every Bolt is catching fire too. And I was actually looking at the stats, and the stats are not that bad. They're way worse than Teslas, you know, just to be clear. But I mean, I think there's been 16 fires or something like that out of over 100,000 vehicles that they've sold. And I would wager that like the vast majority of people have no idea what is the typical number of fires for normal vehicles when there's 100,000 of them out there. BMWs are famous for catching fire in like sitting in parking garages. So there's some like elements of fire that sort of get a little bit, you know, sensationalized. But yeah, I mean, you got to look at the statistics and see where's the safety record for these vehicles. And Tesla definitely has amazing safety record.
Yeah, I've been a firefighter for 18 years. I myself have never been on a vehicle that was caused by electric car fire or a house fire that was caused by an electric car, but I've been on several calls where a gas car in the garage started the whole house on fire or extended from the garage to the house. And maybe not the whole house, is a little exaggerated, but like not one electric car fire.
Right.
Ever. Like, I had a hybrid car, and I don't think the battery was on fire, but it might have been because it was pretty spectacular the way the fire was coming out, and they just put it out like no big deal.
Right.
Like, I'm on a ladder truck, so we don't have hoses or anything like that, so we just rolled up on this accident, and there's a fire, so we stand there and have to call an engine to come and assist us, but everybody was fine. But I've never been on one, and there's a ton in the area that I work. There's a ton of Model 3s and other electric cars. I mean, it just doesn't make
you
any
see
sense.
Them everywhere now in Arizona, which is great.
I counted 8 on the way from I live 20 minutes away, so from my house to here it was 8.
Yeah,
and mostly,
and you're going with the traffic. So
yeah.
That's crazy.
There was a
there's
beautiful
8 in our parking lot right now, which is kind of nuts. When it feels like a Tesla dealership when I come to work here.
Yeah, yeah. There's a beautiful gunmetal gray Model Y out there.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous. It's making me consider that color instead of white.
Yeah,
but okay. Let's talk about residential storage batteries, because really that's what sparked this whole thing.
Yeah, I think I tweeted that seriously considering starting a battery company that focuses on residential battery backup systems.
So you've talked about, you've done a little bit of research in this. This is something that's near and dear to both of our hearts, because I want battery backup storage. I can't get a power wall. Even if I installed more solar on my house, there's a really good chance that I'm not going to get a power wall anytime soon.
Yeah.
So what are kind of your thoughts on correcting this solution?
So it started because I wanted some power walls for my house, right? I already have solar in my house on my primary home, and I wanted more I just wanted battery backup systems. And you can't just buy power walls. You know, they're in such high demand that Tesla only sells them with solar. It's like, damn. So I look for other battery systems. There aren't any great ones out there at a reasonable price. There are some out there, just to be clear, but there aren't any sort of like great companies that are doing what Powerwall is doing, Tesla Powerwalls. And my thinking is that, you know, like the demand for this stuff is only going to increase with the more extreme weather patterns that we're having and electric outages that we have. The demand for battery backup systems for the home is only going to increase. And it's already a multi-billion dollar industry. So as that demand increases, and Tesla has plenty on their plate in terms of like demand for literally everything that they're doing. They cannot make enough stuff. They just can't pay attention to all areas. So this creates an opportunity, right? And you know, I started researching it to see, you know, are there opportunities in battery home backup systems to see if you know, there's an opportunity for a new company to sort of like exist and potentially become a significant player. And I think that there is. So I'm still in the research phase of this. The next question will be whether or not I want to actually like dive into it, because you know doing a startup is a lot of work, but I am pretty excited about it. And you know, in this sort of research, one of the things that I didn't even realize that most homes with solar systems have is that the entire solar system is designed to put the solar power into the grid. And if the grid goes out, your solar system is designed to actually shut down and not produce any power. So even the inverters that virtually all solars on homes have, they're designed to shut down in case the grid goes out. So you cannot even take your own solar and feed it into a battery because you know, they're designed not to produce power if the grid goes down. So it just blew my mind that we have like, I don't know, so many megawatts or gigawatts of power just in Arizona, like on rooftop solar. And all of them are designed not to produce anything in case the electricity goes out. And that is just comical, right? Like it just blew my mind. And, you know, obviously, we should not be doing that. And every solar system should be designed so that it can power batteries and put it on the grid if there's extra. And that way you can, you know, still actually power stuff if the utility goes out, which in extreme weather is happening more and more frequently. So, so there's, I think, a lot of opportunity for, you know, companies to do interesting things in this area. And who knows, I might get brave one day and decide to jump into it.
Well,
if anyone who's listening is interested by this topic, by the way, and like wants to get involved, hit me up.
You're sitting across from somebody. Like, this is something that I'm honestly passionate about. We talked about earlier, like, I don't like, I'm really anti price gouging, right? And it makes me angry that at 4 o'clock I have to pay attention, closer attention to what we're doing in our house,
yeah.
even though, or 2 o'clock or whatever it is now, even though I have two small children. Those clothes still need to be washed. Like
right.
they come home and from school, they're stinky. Those clothes just can't be sitting there. And I don't want to be up at 8:30 at night. And that's when I can start the laundry.
right.
Like that makes me so angry. And like I said, I missed an opportunity to buy the power walls when they were more affordable and when they were just available. I gave Tesla a bunch of money for solar. But I still can't buy them. So
right.
I'm on board. Have you looked at any of the like the zinc bromide or the any of these other kind of battery technology? Australia uses these zinc bromide because they have a terrible grid system.
Right.
And they can go down to zero and then come back up without any much of anything. The only problem is they're big and hard to store.
Right, right. So there's all kinds of really cool battery technology. Part of my research has been that like, you know, my initial goal would not be to try to reinvent the battery or anything like that. It would be using existing technology that exists, but like packaging it up nicely, putting the right software systems in place and selling solutions that are like scalable. You know, you buy it maybe in 5 kilowatt hour increments and, you know, you just stack it, right? A solution like that doesn't exist that's easy to do. Now there are challenges because, you know, connecting it to your home is like still a problem that an electrician would still need to do. So, you know, I've been like looking into how could you solve some of these challenges and still make a viable company that focuses on nice, easy to use packaging and software that sort of like connects it all together really neatly. But, It's not crystallized yet.
Yeah, no, this is not an easy, like, people think, like, they look at the Tesla and they're like, oh, you know, not a lot of thought went into that battery pack, but, like, there are several different chemistry, not formulas. Each of those batteries, the 2170 batteries, you know, some of those are lithium iron phosphate. Some of them are the nickel
right.
batteries. There's even though the car looks the same on the outside, there is different technology or different. I wish I could remember the word. I sound dumb. The chemistry is different for each of those cars depending on how much range they want to get.
Yeah, not to mention that, you know, Tesla did so much battery related work just in the original Roadster. Like the first, you know, 10 years of Tesla's life was a lot around batteries and the electronic components and everything that it needs to be able to power a vehicle and be able to do it in a smooth fashion of like right. ramping up and the amount of energy that it needs to output and the like fast charging. So there's a lot of technology that does need to go into these things. Besides the battery and the chemistry in there, and to make sure also is fireproof or relatively fireproof. So they have done a pretty amazing job at all of that, which is why they're the leader in the industry. But I think there's room for others to potentially play.
And maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I really like your modular,
like
take on this.
Yeah, the 5 kilowatt type of
thing. Right, because you know. Then you can build up, like, because these things are very expensive.
Right.
You know, $20,000 for two power walls. You get a little break off your taxes. You get a little break from a utility company sometimes. But you're still on the hook for a sizable amount of money. It's not something that, we have in an area that I work that there's like mostly like public housing kind of places, right? And all of those places have solar on top of the roof. It would be great if they could have some sort of solution there where they could actually have the storage with the solar so that they're not running into that problem that my family runs into, that they're not washing dishes or cooking with their electric stove on a 4 o'clock on a Monday, because it's literally triple the price to do that at that time.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is that whole price, I think, I forget what they call it, but it's like the different pricing that you're talking about, variable pricing from, I think it's 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. I actually calculated, and electricity is like less than half the price during that time frame. I actually calculated that you could potentially utilize batteries for that period of time and have the batteries pay for themselves essentially in a matter of like a year or two, because just from the savings that you would get by like augmenting your electricity with batteries during that time and then charging it right after. So it's like you're getting electricity at a half the price for roughly 5 hours a day. You know, and that's a pretty significant savings, because those 5 hours happen to be when you actually need electricity the most, which is why the electric company is charging more for it.
Right.
So there's opportunities to utilize battery with software to actually like really save people money in the long run. But it's also a hard sell, because, you know, like you got to convince people that this would be something that would happen for you, right? Like, and that's not an easy thing to convince people.
Right. Well, you need people like you and I who are going to take arrows like on the newer technology. Right. And then when you get, I have never had somebody get into a car, and I've like Tesla's loaned me a couple. I've never had somebody get into the car with the exception of my wife, who's just like, this is just another way for you to get me to buy a car, a new car. But just in general, like, when you get into the Tesla, you're like, oh my gosh, like I keep trying to get them to like, I wanted a long range, and they're like, we'll take the performance. And I was like, no, I'm never going to buy a performance. I want the long range. I want a Tesla. He's like, well, here's how he shows me how you can go in and change it. And I don't know if that's something for the demo cars or for the whatever, but I never took it off performance, because I picked it up at Kierland Commons. We're driving on the freeway. And there's a Maserati, and this guy has no idea that I'm looking at him or I have any sort of inclination of wanting to race him, but he kind of pulls up a little bit. And then I just got on it, and we're in sort of rush hour traffic, and I felt really good about myself. Meanwhile, this guy doesn't care, right? He's just in his car listening to whatever he's listening to and enjoying his Maserati world. But I was like, oh, I felt good.
Yeah.
I've never had anybody get into a Tesla and be like, oh, this sucks. But the same thing is you have to have those use cases, and we don't with home storage, of people coming over and being like, why are you doing the dishes or running the stove, doing the dishwasher and your dryer all at the same time.
Right.
Like that doesn't – like that's harder to solve or to show people the value of. But when you get down and you're having a couple of drinks and you're talking about how your electric bill was $80 in the summer in Arizona, that's where you get that.
Right.
But, you know, the wintertime, that doesn't – like we don't run our heat. We don't run hardly anything. It costs nothing to heat or keep your house going in the wintertime here. But – all right, man. Thank you very much for coming on and being so generous with your time.
My pleasure. It's been fun. It's areas of interest. So, you know, I love what Tesla is doing. I love, you know, future of technology. I think that there's so much goodness there.
Yeah, we are actually like in the turn of the century, when industry started getting big, like that was an exciting time for people. And we're there again, whether we recognize it or not, with the technology and how fast everything's advancing.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to even keep track of anymore, honestly, but it's an exciting time. Do you want to tell everybody about your podcast again and where they could find?
It's AZ Tech Podcast. AZ like for Arizona, and then tech for technology, obviously, AZ Tech Podcast. And you go to aztechpodcast.com or just search it anywhere. It should show up.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Reed.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
All
All right, that is our interview. I hope you enjoyed listening to it, because I certainly enjoyed doing it. It was so much fun to sit down with Hamid and just chat about nerdy things like EVs and technology. And I mean, before we started the show, there was a whole bunch of conversation of just about general nerdy stuff. And like, that's what fuels me. So I'd like to take this time to thank Hamid, not only for coming on the show and being so generous with his time, but also I was like up all day yesterday. Like, my energy was real high yesterday, and I know it was because we got to sit down and we got to be nerds. Oh, and before we go, check out AZ Tech Podcast. I'm going to put it in our friends of the show section of the show notes, but check the podcast out. You're really going to enjoy it. If I could make a recommendation, listen to the Francine Hardaway episode. I'm going to leave it at that, because I've re-recorded this several times, because I think Francine is just such an amazing person. I don't personally know her, but I know people who do know her, and they all say the same thing. I've interacted with her online a little bit. Just go and listen. She's 80 years old, and she, not only does she have an amazing story, she's continuing that amazing story into her next decade. So go and please, please, please listen to that episode. If that's the only one you listen to, it's well worth it, but all of them are great. All right, everybody, that is it for me. If you want to find me on Twitter, it's Bodie, B-O-D-I-E, at 918digital.com. That's my email address, not my Twitter. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at 918digital. I'm also an idiot. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you next Friday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.